back to the podcast. My guest today is Corey Hansen. Works up in Juneau at Alaska Fly Fishing Goods. Thanks for being on here, man.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you just got back from a trip to the Kenai. Was that for a fishing adventure or was it just for fun?
I did, yeah. It was a fishing adventure with some friends. One of the dudes I used to guide with out in Western Alaska has a drift boat up there, and thought we would try our hand at some trout fishing before the season closed, do a little bit of floating, throw the two-hand rods, stuff I can't do in Juneau.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite fly fishing moments was the first time I was on a drift boat, and it's just such a different experience. I'd fish from shore a little bit. I didn't grow up fly fishing. I picked up fly fishing when I was in California after college, and just so much fun to fly fish. And then you add in the drift boat and it's just a whole different experience. It's so great. And like you said, in Southeast, we really don't have, you can kind of float, but that whole fishing from the drift boat and pulling off to side doesn't really exist in Southeast. So it's fun to get in a boat again.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the scale of that river. And, it was really the first time I'd gotten to fish it much. So it was, cool learning experience, but huge, way bigger than anything we have down here that's accessible.
Mm-hmm. Were you fishing the upper or the lower?
We did the upper. It sounded like the middle or the lake broke up while we were there, but we did mostly sportsmen's to gyms.
I've been up there once, and that sportsmen's, that's just, I guess, south of Cooper Landing?
Yeah, yeah. So you can float from the lake to Sportsman's, and then Sportsman's to Jim's. Jim's is the takeout right above the canyon, mm-hmm. I believe. I don't think I'm getting them mixed up.
And then if you do float further than that, like, you're going to end up in Skelak, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of big white water and potentially big wind. Sounds like it can be one of those, like, pick your day right sort of things.
Yeah. When my wife and I went up there for our anniversary, we fished, it was in June, so we were hoping for maybe a king on the Kenai or Kasilof, but they were a little bit late and wasn't really much going on, and the reds hadn't showed up yet, so we really enjoyed the upper just a lot more, because you had the, it was fast water, has that glacial tint to it, and there were a couple of access points from shore, so a lot more fun to get some of those really nice rainbows and Dolly Varden. So even though on the lower part you can get those, you know, 28, 30-inch rainbows, it was just a lot of fun fishing that upper part.
Yeah, totally, totally. I'd heard, like, Quartz Creek going into Kenai Lake can be pretty fun too, but we didn't quite see it when the lake ice was off. It was starting to go, but it was pretty slushy.
Yeah. You said that you guided out in Western. Where were you at there?
Mostly out of Bethel, some of the lower Kuskokwim tributaries, and then like Good News area.
How'd you get into that?
Kind of a funny story. I was going to visit this girl I was dating on Kodiak, and the guy that owned the company, Frontier River Guides, called and asked if I could be in Bethel in 2 days to guide a trip. One of the guys that was going to be on that trip got hurt, so I switched my ticket and flew to Bethel.
Dang. Had you been out there before?
No, it was my first time. The other guide happened to be a good buddy of mine from Juneau, and he kind of showed me the ropes. I learned how to row the raft as we go, and yeah, it was a ton of fun.
Nice. Are you from Juneau originally?
No, I'm not. I moved up here when I was in sixth grade, so... 2001. I moved up here from Yellowstone.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, you probably grew up fishing, I would assume.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's a whole different ball game, and it's so much. When people talk about enjoying fly fishing so much, and I spent a couple summers down in Wyoming when my wife was getting her PhD, and people say, "Why would you go down there? You know, we got king salmon up here." And I said, "Well, I mean, it's different. You can't really compare. Trolling for king salmon is its own type of fun, but you're in some of those prairie lakes and you're throwing hoppers, man. Like that is really
Oh,
awesome
yeah.
too, but in a totally different way. And it's yeah, that is again another thing that I kind of miss. I don't want to like move down south, but man, drift boats and fishing hoppers is just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and that was part of the appeal for Western Alaska to me, rowing rafts, but big rainbows on mouse patterns is just thrilling. Oh, it's so much fun.
I've done a little bit, but not a whole lot down here again in Southeast. Have you had any luck with the mouse pattern down here in Southeast?
Very, very infrequently, but sometimes you get into those lake systems that have some resident cutthroat. They get pretty big, and you can totally get one to come up and take a mouse pattern. Not as readily as a leech or a bead if it's during the salmon spawn, but the take is so fun.
Yeah.
It's worth trying.
Yeah, I don't know if I would. Some people have put GoPros on their downriggers so they can kind of look at the king salmon that almost come up to take, and that would be so nerve-wracking. I don't even know if I could handle that. It's hard enough for me to watch a fish like start to track the hopper or the mouse,
Yeah.
and you just oh, there it is, there it is, there it is. And some of my I wouldn't say worst memories because they're not really bad memories, but just pulling a hopper out of the mouth of a massive brown trout because you just can't be patient. Like, oh my gosh, there it is. But they're eating so deliberately and it's so slow and relaxed, just yanking it right out of its mouth, just strip set the heck out of that thing. And oh, just brutal. I can still see it.
Oh yeah, that's why the one of the New Zealanders say, "God save the Queen."
Right. Yeah. So you fished down south, Idaho, Wyoming. You fished a lot of Alaska. Have you done any overseas stuff or other countries?
You know, not a whole lot. My grandparents lived down in Baja when I was younger, so we got to go down there and we did some fishing, but it was deep sea, billfish and tuna and tons of fun. But one thing I never got to do was bring the fly rod down and try to go after rooster fish. That's super high on my bucket list.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun too. I think number one currently would be going down to Patagonia. And
For sea trout or
for probably rainbows, browns. Have you read anything by David Coggins?
no, I haven't.
He's got two books out. One's The Optimist, the other's The Believer. And he talks about the float trips in Patagonia and how at lunchtime it's like a full-on table with a tablecloth and you get this like pickled boar head and you get sausage and then like they'll cook steak for you and then there's a little bit of wine and if you want to take a siesta they got hammocks and stuff and it's just like an all-day event but it doesn't have that wake up at 4 in the morning, you're on the water and you're just burning through the entire day. You're having a trashy little sandwich for lunch. It just seems like this super fun, relaxed experience that I could never afford. But man, it just seems to get to those areas that are just untouched. And I'm sure you saw that a lot in Western Alaska. I haven't been out there. But just to see
Oh,
how
you've never been in.
Never have. I'm a bad Alaskan. I grew up here in Southeast and we always went south during the summer. And then since
Yeah.
then, it's pretty expensive to try to do something out there.
That is the unfortunate reality now for sure, with cost of planes and fuel, it's so expensive. It's hard to get around this state, really.
Yeah, it really
But
is.
you should put it on the list for sure.
I know, and that's it just gets worse and worse. Like the it just gets more and more expensive, and then it's hard to even figure out. And maybe this is a good thing, because the more people write about things, the more people start doing things. And it doesn't seem really that there's a much of a DIY opportunity. It's more you kind of stay at the lodge, or you stay at maybe a camp or something, but then you still got to get around, and it ends up being pretty expensive. Did you see much DIY stuff out in that area?
More as the years went on, for sure. There's a few outfitters that will rent boats and whatnot. In, oh, let's see, like 2020, the first year of COVID, the season got totally canceled. And after that, the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge stopped allowing guide use into one of the access points on a river that's fairly popular out there. So it opened up a lot more DIY traffic for that particular drainage. But DIY float trips are, it definitely does take like the right sort of person to want to go do that, because the bugs are bad generally. The weather can be bad. There's bears around. It's not relaxing, I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
But the fishing is quite good.
Yeah, that's the thing about going to an area that you're unfamiliar with. You look at some of the downsides potentially, and they end up being a lot more maybe glaring or a lot more severe than they really are. When you're in that brown bear
Yeah.
territory, the expectation is that around every corner there's a whole bunch. There's like sows and cubs just nonstop, and that's probably not the reality, but you can't
Right.
help but think about it. So it's that matter of you be prepared and aware, but not paranoid.
Right. Which for some people is easier said than done.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And until they make bear-proof tent fabric, the peace of mind isn't totally there.
Well, that's the funny thing too, because I would never sleep just out. I would want to be like the tent, obviously for the mosquitoes too, but it is funny just how that false sense of security that does come with just a small piece of fabric to it's
Yeah.
just
Well,
ridiculous, but
I can't see it, so it must be okay.
that's right. That's right. Just like closing the eyes, feel like an ostrich or something.
Yeah.
So how'd you get to Juneau then?
I moved up here, well, like I said, sixth grade. So my dad got a job with the Forest Service, and our family came up here.
Nice. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting the stories of people coming up here, and a lot of times it is like a good job opportunity, some exciting stable job. My parents came up as teachers. Forest Service is a good way to come up here. And then you
Yeah, for sure.
decided to stay there, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't really bring myself to leave the state, for everything I wanted to do. Alaska really is the best place to do it, expedition guiding and the fishing and just the vastness of it all. I couldn't pull myself away from it. I was fortunate enough to be able to ski patrol here at Eagle Crest for a number of years out of high school into fairly recently too. So I just had a lot of fun.
That's an awesome ski resort. Like it's I the first time I'd ever been there, I was there in March, and it's tucked back in there, so it's kind of a wintry mix in town at sea level, but then you get back up in there and it's just this great snow, and I love the feeling of the lodge because it's not some really expensive, pretentious monstrosity. You know, it's like this
No.
is like a rugged old, very, very Alaskan. Not to say that there's anything wrong with like an Alyeska type of experience, but it has that grittiness to it, and it's yeah, it was
That's a
super
good way
fun.
to describe it.
Yeah, that's great. How many days do you usually go? Do you say you ski patrol there or not anymore?
No, not anymore. I've kind of had a little bit of a ski hiatus for the last couple years, actually.
You got an injury or something?
No, I just haven't made the time for it. So many years of working up there, it's been easy to find other things to do.
That makes sense.
I should. I live down the road from it. Those are bad excuses, but.
Yeah, so you guys have a lot of hiking opportunities there. You got a couple rivers, a lot more opportunities than Ketchikan does. We have to take skiffs or boats to some of the neighboring rivers and whatnot. So you do have a couple rivers that are on the road system. Are those pretty solid for dollies and steelhead this time of year, or are you kind of waiting for the salmon later on?
They are fairly decent, especially for dollies later in the year. Pretty much April, mid-April, whenever the ice melts off the lakes around town, we'll kind of start getting into some trout fishing, and then once the dollies and the trout start migrating to the saltwater, that's really when our fishing season starts picking up. So right about now, we're just starting to see fish in the ocean and steelhead in a couple of the streams here on the road system. Cowie Creek all the way at the end of the road to the north. It's probably the biggest river or like watershed. Really, really good fishing, but it's changed a lot recently too, with these big rain events and lots of trees falling down. It's pretty dynamic.
What's your setup? Are you going two-handed seven weight? Are you going six weight, eight weight? What's your steelhead rig?
Steelhead rig, unfortunately, not two-handed around here. Just not quite big enough. I like 9.5 foot seven weight generally. Little bit longer for throwing beads, which is my favorite thing to fish for steelhead. I like catching fish.
Yeah, I like I have a 10-10 Echo switch rod, which I really like for some of the heavier rigs. And so even though the rivers here aren't very big, it's just nice. You get a pretty good reach, and then you can, roll cast the heck out of that. So
Oh yeah, definitely.
yeah, it'd be nice. Like if you think about your quintessential lower 48 steelhead fishing, you're out there and you're catching or you may be catching a fish, but just huge water wide and you got your spey rod. But yeah, around here it's a lot more tight quarters, but I've found that switch rod is pretty nice and definitely has some good applications. But
Yeah, some guys really like them, especially down that way, like over on Prince of Wales. There are the bigger rivers that you can swing skagit lines, and so a one rod to do it all. The switch rod's quite popular.
Do you fish with a switch?
Sometimes I more and more try to either just do the roll casting with the bead rod, the 9.6s, or throw two hand lines outside of Juneau mostly. There's limited like two hand beach stuff we can do if the tide's really moving. So that's kind of interesting. But more and more I'm using a four weight, kind of like the trout spey size rod for that.
Yeah, I'd seen that for some of that beach fishing for kings that people are using switch rods. When do the kings start showing up, and then what varies? I had heard maybe that this year wasn't expected to be a good year. Like, what's the king situation up there?
So usually by the first week in June, we'll start seeing them from shore where people can go catch them. This year, we're dealing with not great return numbers, part of the landslide that has affected the coho returns the last 2 years. So we'll see kind of what all comes of that. They did shut down part of the area to hatchery king fishing this year. So, kind of the Fritz Cove, Fish Creek area is really the only spot that will be open around here this year as of right now.
Is that something that you get after, or is it just kind of
I go
a
a lot. Not as much catching. It's pretty frustrating, to be honest. The best spots to throw the two-hand rod are incredibly buggy with no CMs. I mean, it takes like some Zen mastery to not lose your mind. And you see a lot of fish, but they don't bite fly very often.
Is that open for snagging too?
That part of the terminal area is.
Yeah, there's a spot on Prince of Wales that used to always go to at Whale Pass, and there are a couple times.
Okay.
Like for the most part, it's just meat harvest. I'm gonna go there. I'm just trying to get my fish. You know, nothing big. But a
Yeah.
couple of times, went up there with my fly rod and. You know, everyone else is just ripping, and I'm trying to, you know, present something and hoping that it takes. And I think, man, am I just really wasting my time? Like they get stirred up so much with all the, you know, those anchor-sized hooks getting thrown out there. So it's, you know, in the salt of that brackish water, it's not the same sort of holding, pushing up type things. It's just a lot different, and so it's, I don't know, it doesn't have that same feeling like you're getting a good drift or that you have a chance, like you're just casting to probably nothing.
I mean, that's kind of how it is here. You'll be, throwing a two-hand rod next to people throwing flying C's, and oh man, the people with flying C's just smack them. And then down the beach, there's some treble hooks, and it's kind of wild. It's a unique fishery.
What's one of your other favorite things to do in that area?
Oh, not fishing related.
Could be either. If we haven't hit a fishing thing, then definitely finish with that.
I like the dolly fishing around here. There's just something about that fish in particular. A lot of people in Alaska kind of turn up their noses at dollies for whatever reason. And there used to be a bounty on them because, they ate the salmon and that was bad. But I think their life cycle is pretty cool. And being able to, target them 1 month in the salt water and another month in the fresh water, the same fish, it's just really neat.
Yeah. It is pretty wild just to think about, like you were talking about that bounty and the fact that it was like in the 20s or 30s or whenever that was. And obviously, if there's so many fish around that they had survived the Dolly Varden all those eons of time, so to all of a sudden show up and think, wait a second here, these fish might eat these fish out of existence, so let's put a bounty on them. Pretty funny, but yeah, I don't know.
We've
May
come a long way.
we have in some regards, definitely for sure. But yeah, I really really enjoy dollies. They're just such a fun fight, or just a voracious eating fish. There are a couple of spots on the Thorn River that my buddy and I found that were just phenomenal, and you're just it's nonstop. And even though the fish are very similar, just the different spots and the color of the spots, and then of course the size of the fish varies, but just an
Sure.
awesome fish, and like you said, pretty underrated. They're awesome.
Yeah, totally. That's my favorite. One of these years, an Arctic trip for the monster chars in order.
Yeah, that's a whole different ball game. I was up on the Haul Road a couple of years ago on a caribou hunt, and I'd brought a fly rod, and we stopped once for grayling real quick.
Okay.
But when we were getting toward where it dumped into the Arctic, you know, we'd heard that there was a whole bunch of really good char fishing in that area. I thought, man, every minute we stay here to fish, we're not caribou hunting. So I was like, let's just
Yeah.
we're here for caribou. We're not here for char. I'll see if I can get that some other time. But Now I think, man, just like 15 minutes, give it a shot. Just see if you could just get a bargain fish right there. So I do kind of regret that, but did get an Arctic grayling in the Arctic, which is pretty sweet.
That is pretty cool.
You guys don't have any grayling around there, do you?
No, we don't. If you go up to Haines or Skagway and pop up into the Yukon, that's the nearest place you can get into them.
Have you ever done that?
I have not actually fished up there, not at all.
Yeah.
I'd like to. The ferry system is less than dependable these days,
Yeah.
as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, it's
gone
a
are the days of just being able to hop on, go to Haines for the weekend for an affordable price.
Yeah, now it's you got to plan a week in advance because it only comes through once a week. Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. Like going through all that trouble just to catch a grayling, like it's a beautiful fish. It's kind of worth it, but man, like all that time and that money could be spent some other way. It would be awesome
Totally.
to put the truck on the ferry, get up to Haines, drive into the interior, fish in there, and then head down to Kenai Peninsula and just have a monster fish fest. But by the time
Oh,
you
yeah.
start piecing out all the logistics, the time it would take, the cost of the ferry, because that thing is, it's almost prohibitive expense-wise to put the truck on the ferry and then get somewhere. So yeah, it's
Totally.
I've thought about doing that quite a bit, but then the cost and the time just, it's not gonna work.
Yeah, well, and then, maybe you'll get stuck.
Yeah, that's yeah, it's too bad. It is really I remember as a kid growing up, it was dependable. It was just kind of the way you went, and the people would get on the boat and they would at each port just get off for 24 hours. You could see the town. You get a good idea of sea wrangle, walk around, have a meal, stay at a bed and breakfast. Same thing with Petersburg, just work your way north. But now it's just way too expensive, and like you said, you don't know if the thing's gonna break down or not.
Who knows?
Yeah. So let's get a little more specific about steelhead. You said you got a trip
Sure.
coming up. It's gonna be awesome. Is there a time of year that you usually shoot for, and what are you looking for water wise? Do you kind of like those deeper pockets and chutes of the canyons, the meat factory areas, or are you looking at what are you looking for?
Kind of depends on the individual watershed, but I'd say every year when I'm trying to kind of plan my time frame that I want to try to do a trip, I would say like being flexible with your dates is definitely the best in case it's, super cold or super rainy. But water temperature is super important. I think kind of around here, once it gets up over 40 degrees, is when that fish get really active. Big tides out in the salt water are going to help move fish around. And then just kind of like general timing, I'd say once you're in mid-May onward, it's kind of getting a little bit late. Probably not many new fish coming in, and the ones that are around are spawning. So I try to get out earlier. The sea tuck up in Yakutat. Have you ever fished that river?
I haven't. That's kind of it's on the list for sure, but we've had some really good fishing down here, Ketchikan area, Prince of Wales, that I'm like, well, why would I leave this and go up there and deal with the crowds and try to figure it out? And
Totally. So it's pretty busy up there right around now. But I've had some good years there where it's like end of March even. But it takes the right winter. Rainy, warm, 44. We used to go either there or down to Prince of Wales every year. Just kind of try to get 10-day window. And you're right, Prince of Wales is amazing. Why
Yeah.
would you bother with the sea tug?
Yeah. When I moved back in 2013, 13. I came back to kind of help out with my mom a little bit, and so I was a substitute teacher. And any day that I didn't have a sub job in January and February, I'd go to the river, and I'd ride my bike to the river, and some days catch three or four fish, and I was just like, this is unbelievable, because they had a nice winter run there. And then, man, it was just so awesome. And then when I moved over to Ketchikan, start teaching there, figured out some of the rivers in the area, and it's pretty wild, like you said, with the what the winter was. And I looked back at a picture from, I think it was 8 years ago, and behind me, I'm holding a steelhead, and behind me, everything is already in full like spring mode. So there's leaves on all the bushes. And that was the year that I convinced a buddy from California to come up. I said, hey, come up last week of March. This year it was awesome, so let's just plan on that. And he came up, and that year ended up kind of being the anomaly. And the following year, the following like 4 or 5 years, it's been cooler, the water's been lower, the water's been colder. And just not having that knowledge of when you fish the same river for 10 years, you figure out that, okay, maybe like mid-April is a pretty consistent time. By that point, we've warmed up, water should be up, you should be in pretty good shape. That early A couple earlier weeks might be good, but it all depends on all those other factors. Like you said, you get a nice good rain, things come up, they push up, you're in good shape. But I feel kind of bad. Like he caught one the first day, I got one the first day, and then we caught some trout, but that was it. And it just certainly was not as wide open as it was the year before, and that makes a big difference. So now later into April and then beginning of May is when it's going to be consistent, but it's been pretty low this year.
Well, we my buddy that's coming down here, we all went up to the SeaTuck last year, one of those roll the dice and let's just buy tickets. And yeah, it was still snowing. It was like 17 degrees at night.
Oof.
Camped out for 9 days. It's like, well, this is not exactly what I had in mind.
Yeah. It's funny because when you think of steelhead, you think of misery. And if you winter steelhead fish, like that's exactly what you're expecting. Like when I was out fishing on those January and February days, it's like, yeah, your hands, as soon as you catch a fish, you're super stoked, but your hands touch the water, and so you're on borrowed time, because you're just going to be getting cold and you can't. But then if that same sort of weather, even comparable weather, happens in March or April, you're like, how dare it? This is so cold and miserable, when it would have been fine if it was January, February. But there's like a switch in my brain that goes off in around March, where I start to get a little bit more spring steelhead mode, and I lose my ability to tolerate the conditions a little bit.
right around daylight savings or
Yeah, right.
starting to be a little bit light when you get off work,
Yeah.
everybody's favorite time of year.
Yeah. Well, what are you going fly wise? I've been a huge fan of, I don't really like fishing those deeper slots where you can't really see the bottom, but they're really effective. That's a great spot where they hold. And like the liquid wrench is such an awesome fly for those spots. So great. I kind of like some smaller patterns that are a little bit more subtle, especially when the water is a little bit lower. What are some of your go-to flies?
Man, pink 10 mil bead.
That's it, huh?
That is probably what I've got more steelhead on than anything else combined. But it's one of those things, I've thought about it a lot. I've got friends that fish flies, different colors beads, different sizes. Everybody catches fish. But I really think that it doesn't matter so much what you're using, as long as you have confidence that it's going to catch you a fish, it probably will.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, I've talked myself out so many times. Like I hate this fly, or like I lose my last liquid wrench, and I'm like, well, I'm not gonna catch anything now, and so I'm using
Might
what
as well
would
just go home.
just yeah go. I'm using what's probably someone else's number one option, but because it's not my number one option, I just or if the color's wrong, Like I have purple, I don't have black, no faith. Or like orange, but
No
not
faith in
red. And
black.
just like, gosh, man, like it's weird. I think, no, again, this is exactly what you need. It's gonna be fine. You caught a couple of fish on this, it's gonna be fine. But yeah, if you can't fish it on your own terms, that's such a hit potentially to the self-esteem. You just gotta reprogram and think, no. This exists because it works. Purple, black, pink, orange, they all work. Fish it right,
Yeah.
fish the water right, pay attention, and yeah, make it happen.
I don't know how you approach, or are you like change flies a bunch sort of guy, or
I kind of get lazy, and so I probably don't change as much as I should. I'm kind of in that if you fish the wrong fly long enough, it'll probably become the right fly. So, yeah, I don't
there you
like
go.
spending my whole day feeling like I was just tying knots. But
Right.
I don't know. It kind of depends on maybe how much coffee I had in the morning, because some days I'll switch more than others. But yeah, I like being able to be confident that I fished it well, then maybe give it a break and go back through with something else.
Gotcha. Yeah, I find that I change depth quite a bit. I find that that is a big deal when it comes to hooking fish or not. But I also won't linger too much. It's kind of like, well, if they're here, they'll eat this pink bead. If they don't eat it, then whatever. I'm not catching it today.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing too, is the depth and then the time. Sometimes you're beating your head against the wall. And I like to look for an opportunistic one, especially this time of year when there's more people out there. If I get out there super early, I kind of want to hit two spots before I see somebody else, just in case. So I go to my number one option, and then if it's not producing, go to number two, and then just kind of see. And then the depth thing is, it doesn't take that much more water to make
Right.
your fly not fish right. And so you need more weight, or you need to do something, or even your angles and the holding can be just a little bit off. And yeah, just having that knowledge of the river, having fished it enough, and then just being sure that you're fishing that depth, because you can just be on top. And that was when I first started off. I remember fishing, people say, oh, use a prince nymph. This wasn't for a steelhead, this is down in California. It's like, oh, just fish a prince nymph. And so I'd use a prince nymph, which weighs nothing, and you're fishing in 12 feet of water, and it's nowhere near where it has to be. And then someone finally said, well, we're using shot. I was like, oh, you got to use shot to get it down, because the fish aren't. Yep, that makes a lot of sense. And it was embarrassing, but yeah, they aren't just going to come up to it just for the sake of it. You got to put it get it in the lane and put it in a tempting spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, water temp, that's where water temp makes a big difference. I don't know. I carry a thermometer. I don't know if you're a temp sort of fisherman. I don't think enough people are, to be honest. It's just different, instead of like down south where they're temping the water to see if it's too hot to fish. We're kind of like, ooh, when is it going to hit the magic warmth that the fish are going to become active? And
I've thought about it, and I when I'm out there, yeah, I kind of put my hand in there. I think, well, this is, in my subjective way of trying to figure out what the temperature is, I'm like, man, this does feel a little bit cold. But yeah, that's definitely something that I should carry, because it doesn't weigh much, and take some notes and just be a better angler, get more data so you can make better decisions.
that is a good thing. Everybody likes data.
You got to overanalyze. It's not worth doing if you can't overanalyze it.
Yeah, well, and fishermen have opinions,
That's right.
some stronger than others.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So how long is your, are you just doing like a weekend trout fest, or are you going for a little while longer?
I'm gonna take 5 days off and just kind of poke around town. My buddy that's coming down, he's never hooked a steelhead and
Nice.
kind of wanted to go back to the sea tuck, but I don't like going up there when it's crowded. And frankly, There are other places that you can have a decent day of fishing without the crowds.
Yeah, that's kind of intertwined with my expectation of what I think steelhead fishing is that level of solitude. So I think it'd be kind of tough for me to share too much when there's a couple people on the river. A lot of these rivers are not really big enough to have more than one person at the holes, and some of these
Yeah.
there's only three or four holes that are really good and fishable anyway. So yeah, crowds are tough.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Juneau is not huge, but the fishing community is getting a little bit bigger, so there are times that things can get crowded. So I would rather, I generally am not going out fishing to catch fish necessarily. It's nice when it happens, but it's not the only thing that's important
Yeah.
when I'm angling for myself.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So if someone was listening and was interested in getting into steelhead fishing, what would you recommend if they came into the shop up there? What would you get them hooked up with? Maybe like an entry level setup that you guys have there at the shop.
A good 7 or 8 weight, probably just a 9 footer is what I recommend most people. The extra length can be a little bit to get used to. Floating line set up for more like indicator fishing as opposed to bombing out big streamers. And then handful of flies, those liquid wrenches, the galaxy worms, a couple of Mike Cole's other patterns just do work on fish. It's disgusting how many fish they catch year to year. And some beads. That would pretty much cover everything. The other thing to keep in mind for beginning steelhead anglers especially, so you got your rod, reel, flies, line entry cost, but a good pair of waders, nice rain jacket are really quite important just for being able to get around the river. And the weather isn't generally super awesome during steelhead season, and potentially you're going to be venturing out farther from people, so just really being able to keep yourself dry, it's very important. That's probably one of the most important things about being a new Alaskan, just like how to stay warm, how to stay dry.
That's right. That's right. As far as rods go, I have a Sage Method 7 weight, and I absolutely love it. So what
Nice.
about as far as models? Because I know fly fishing models get cycled through pretty quickly. You don't have a there this isn't the 10th rendition of the method. They kind of go to something else. So as far as like a brand or a model, because I know those Sage rods, they're a premium rod, but if you don't really know what the difference is, if you haven't casted that $60 Fluger and just hated life, then you're not going to appreciate the TFO, which then you would appreciate the Echo and then on up to the Sage. So as far as brand of rod and reel,
Yeah.
what do you have there at the shop that you'd recommend?
For people that are just starting out and really not trying to spend a ton of money, we have a package that we call the Alaska Ready. Echo Ion Rod Reddington Behemoth Reel and a Rio Grande line. And that's like just super functional. You got to be kind of careful with the cast aluminum and the salt water, but it's a good way to get into it without breaking the bank. That being said, the new R8, especially the 10 footer single hand rods, are just incredible. I'm fishing the 9.5 foot 7 weight R8 right now, and I love it. With the Nautilus CCF reel, man, that thing just is sweet and will last forever.
Yeah, that's the thing that people say buy once, cry once, but if you buy something that's really good and you don't have to keep rebuying stuff, it's not really crying because you appreciate the quality of it. You know, you don't want to just like go in day one and spend $2,000 on a bunch of stuff you don't really appreciate. But if you buy your super trashy intro rod and then a moderate rod and then an intermediate rod and then a lower premium and then a premium, I mean, it might even be better to just get like a nicer rod right off the bat. That way you're not replacing everything.
Yeah, totally. And you know, there are two other things I tell people. First of all, uniquely here in Southeast, other parts of Alaska, but with the coho season in Juneau, you're going to recoup some of the money by just being able to fill the freezer via fly fishing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Like hobby, get food, you know. The other thing is buying a more expensive, nicer rod going to make you fish more? If the answer is yes, then buy it. Like, why not? Because the idea is to fish more, right?
Yeah.
Work less, fish more. That's my goal.
That's right. What about fly line? You can go on to like Rio's website or go into the shop and just see. I mean, you got the gold premiere and you got the gold and you got, I mean, all there's a so many different fly lines that you can look at. So what might be, you said the floating line, Rio gold versus floating grand, what are you looking at?
So I generally don't think the Rio gold has much use here in Alaska. Great dry fly line, but just not enough mass to cast some of these big heavy streamers or mouse patterns. The indicator lines, the Scientific Anglers and Madro is currently my favorite. Great for beating, whether it's, you know, on your bigger rod for steelhead or your smaller trout rod, dolly rod later in the summer. And then we've got some streamer lines that are, you know, heavy lines, occasionally too much for the rod, but they're really designed to throw a Dalai Lama, which is kind of the Alaska pattern right now. I mean, they're super effective, but just horrible to cast.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so the thing,
one,
too.
One nice. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that you don't have to worry about presenting. Some people have this idea of, you know, rolling out a super pretty cast and you're presenting the fly. But with these voracious eating fish, like, just get it out there. It's fine.
Totally.
Splash it out there. It doesn't matter.
I generally have a rule that if 8-pound Maxima doesn't fit through the eye of the hook, I don't fish it.
Yeah.
No 5x 6x
no
needed.
There is no need. Do you tie your own leaders or do you go with tapered?
I do. I'm not a huge fan of the tapered leaders. I've seen multiple times people lose whole rod reel setups out of the boat out on like float trip in Western Alaska. They're not paying attention and all of a sudden they've got like the 50-pound butt section of a tapered leader and go to break it off and just gets ripped out of their hands. So it's like, oh, can we get our rod back? Like, no, probably not.
Yeah. What about, I was watching, some video somewhere about, the little rings or something like that for switching lines. I don't even know what they're,
Some guys use like tippet rings. Some guys will use like a barrel swivel to prevent twisting on the bead rigs. There are these fly clips now, but I'm pretty old school. Just blood knots and a non-slip mono loop does me pretty well.
Yeah, when I was really into it in California, and so, going to the sportsmen's expos and watching a lot of films, and it was just awesome. And so when all these other little gimmicky type things came up in the last 10, 15 years, I've been up here, and so I haven't been as in tune to all that stuff. And so when I kind of re-enter the lower 48 fly fishing world and hear about these tippet rings, I'm thinking, wait, what happened while I was up here? Am I missing out on anything? But for the most part, it's like, oh no, not at all. It's just like a thing that you could do, but you really don't have to.
Yeah, like totally personal preference. Whatever. It's another one of those, like, yeah, great. If you want to use it, use it. No one's gonna stop you.
Yeah. Well, coming up on 50 minutes here. So, what do you got for a pitch for the store, or any closing thoughts?
Yeah, just want to say thanks for having me. It was great to finally get to chat.
Yeah.
We are starting to do some of our fly casting lessons. So the next one we have coming up on May 24th, I'm going to do a two-hand class on June 1st, and then May 16th. At Twin Lakes here in Juneau, we're going to have a community casting night. It's an event we usually do with the Trout Unlimited chapter. So people can come and, get a free casting lesson, maybe try some demo rods, and generally just chat about fly fishing. And somehow, at least anecdotally, it's always sunny that night.
Of course.
But yeah, no, the fishing season is just getting going and it's gonna keep getting better and better. So if anyone is headed this way or has any questions, would love to help you get pointed in the right direction.
And then you do a lot of order fulfilling online at alaskaflyfishinggoods.com. So people
We
can look
do.
around and shop, and there's information about seasons and regions and fish and all that stuff.
Tons and tons of info, yeah, online there. We got some resources, fly tying videos and whatnot. We try to do a few new ones every year, and we're gonna try to start maybe hosting a trip. There's whisperings of a potential Christmas Island mission
Oh.
in the near future, so there's some exciting things coming up.
Yeah, shoot, that'd be great. Yeah. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate you coming on here, and good luck with your steelhead trip.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. Thanks for having me. And man, I hope the weather stays just misty for you. It doesn't get any worse.
Yeah, I'm not gonna hold my breath.
Yeah, no, you have lived here for a while,
Yeah.
sounds like so.
I know the drill, but it's all right.
Yeah, right on.
Cool. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right.
Have a great day.
You too.